You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
If you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel, I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on the throne? I wonder where you are. Is it all your fault? I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all. So why don't you smile?
Montana man likes this song. He's like, hey man, why don't you shut up with that song playing?
Don't you love the life you kill? The priest is on the phone. Your father hit the wall. Your mother disowned you. Don't suppose I'll ever know. For me to be a man, I'm something I can change. I live around here. I want to wake up with you.
Minutes after 9. Bob Nielsen just posted something someplace about anybody who gets elected ought to have to watch Ken Rogers' documentary entitled Bravo, Common Men, Uncommon Valor. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, it's on Amazon Prime. You can check it out there. Put it on your list of things to do if you haven't seen it. You've heard us talk about it. And, you know, I'm waiting on the gunner. He didn't answer, so I don't know what he's doing. He's probably cleaning his garage. He's got his head down. I shared the sentiment of some Vietnam veterans that I was talking to a couple weeks ago. And I got a bunch of email about it. And so the sentiment was this. One of them does faith-based post-traumatic stress counseling. And in the privacy of a private discussion with a fellow Vietnam veteran, he said, I don't know, given their reaction to what they saw, okay, and so just mind you, the spectrum of conflict, okay, what we fought, I mean, anybody who stands against the United States conventionally is stupid. It's stupid. Because if you've seen if you've seen Desert Storm, it's not even close to competitive sporting, they don't even have a chance, right? The march up from Kuwait to Baghdad, similar. If we can see you, you're going to get whacked from a distance that renders you helpless. And then the rest of the fighting that has gone on in Iraq and Afghanistan has been an insurgency. So really, the last conventional opponent that we fought that would rocket, mortar, and then close with you and fight you and kill you was the North Vietnamese Army in the northern part of I Corps in the hill battles, as they called them. Well, these guys were a part of that. Okay, so their experience at war is very different than, and so you'll see it chronicled in the documentary Bravo. It was interesting, though, the email I got from Marines who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan saying, I heard that, and I winced a little bit when I heard it. It's like, oh, as we all do. And the gist of it was, do the young people of this country today have it? Could they endure what we endured? And so the email I got was mostly from Iraq and Afghanistan vets saying, look, I only know my own experience, but I winced when I heard that. I'd like to be able to think that we could, but what those guys went through was incredible. It was crazy. So I thought, I've thought a lot about that. And I would tell you that my experience in three deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan, I saw nothing but the most incredible things I've ever seen in my life relative to courage, selflessness, and bravery. Okay? And so I think it comes back to, and what's unique about the Marine Corps is when you describe for somebody who's going to join the service, you can have door number one, two, three, or four. Door number one is for really the really smart guys. That's door number one. Door number two, you can see the world. Door number three and fours, they do a lot of the same things. Door number three is pretty reasonable. Door number four is pretty unreasonable. It's the craziest of all the boot camps, and they're a little bit more fanatical. What door do you want? Well, I think, and this has always been the case for the Marine Corps, the people that choose door number four are different. They're in a different group. They're looking for something different. And so that's what you get in the Marine Corps. You get that group of people. Everything else the Marine Corps does is based on those people. And you could say, we joke about it, not right in the head and all the rest of it, but the bottom line is they're looking for something different. You have short guys with a chip on their shoulder. You have big guys that want more, that want to be challenged. You have everything in between, everything in between. But chose that. And I think that in America's history, that when you're in that situation, you don't have a choice. So could they do it? Yeah, they'll do it. And the reason they'll do it is, joining us now, is the...
Sorry.
It's all right. You don't need to apologize. You got it right. Joining us now is the one and only Michael Musselman.
Yeah. No, hey, I was on the phone with Paul Zoldra. So he's coming on Tuesday at 9. So you're
fine. Nice. All right. Well done, my friend.
We were laughing. We were just catching up. So it's been a long time. But we were talking about that duffel bag article, and he said that picture is everything about that on that Twitter, that tweet was real, which makes it more funny.
Well, okay, explain to everybody what we're talking about.
We're talking about, how the vets, the worst thing you can say to a vet is happy Memorial Day. and I can tell people, when people would say that, like, happy Memorial Day to me. And if I knew him, I'd be looking at him saying, thank you. I'm not dead yet, but I appreciate it. And they look at my confusion. I said, Memorial Day honors the fallen, those that are no longer with us. Veterans Day honors the veterans that have served. And so, you know, you get the little schooling, and they're like, oh, I didn't know that. Well, this case, someone had talked about how the older, like, shoot, even the Civil War and the guys, how proud they'd be of everything right now, of the economy. And it was kind of like, what are you talking about? You know, just pure craziness. Like, what? You couldn't make this shit up. And that's how it all went out. So Duffelblog guys wrote this whole long article about how these interned guys from, like, the Revolutionary War were very proud of their service and proud that of how the economy and Trump is doing in it, and that, you know, whatever, black voters, or, you know, just across the whole spectrum, because that's what this whole article is about.
Yeah.
And I wish I had eyes to see this right now, but I'm dead, you know. It was just, the article is a classic. Right? Right. It really is, because, you know, satire is a lost art. It really is.
It is. It's funny.
You can be good at it. Yeah. And when you're good at it.
And he's good.
He's really good. So, yeah, he still runs the Duffelblog. And
it was, and just so everybody knows, it was the president's tweet, okay? That was the president's tweet. And then he took,
right.
He took it and he did something really funny. Mike and I were reading it. And we were laughing about it because it.
Well, if you read the president, do you have the tweet there yet? Because I had it written down at one time. But President Trump tweeted.
Hold on. I'll find it.
It is freaking, like, this is what we talk about. Hey, if you're the president of the United States, talk about presidential stuff.
He can't
go down rabbit holes you don't know about.
He can't. He doesn't. He doesn't know how. Duffelblog, here's the headline. Dead veterans agree with President Trump, are happy and proud of low unemployment numbers. And so here's the president's here's the president's tweet. And let me just tell you, I don't know, I first saw, my daughter showed it to me, Catherine showed it to me. She says,
I thought it was fake.
Right, and I thought it was fake too. And I looked, and then underneath it, you see, at real Donald Trump, and you're thinking, shit, man. And I got an email from Ty Edwards. Ty listens to the program. He says, because Mike and I were talking about Happy Memorial Day, and we kind of made a joke about it, you know, and I think it helps me the way I deal with it. Memorial Day isn't for us. It's for the rest of the population. It's a day they visit, right, our tribal region. And our job is to educate them, because they simply don't know. They're ignorant. Most of them are great Americans and they're good people, but they don't have anybody who serves, because only 1% serve. They just don't understand. And so that helps me.
Right.
That helps me. And so I even said Happy Memorial Day to Tim Lynch. Hey, bud, Happy Memorial Day. He said, what are you talking about? I said, come on, man, get with the program. Get with the program. He said, Mac, you are killing me with that. But anyway, so Mike and I were talking about this, and so I started getting, and everybody had the same reaction. Ty Edwards had the same reaction, like, I thought this was a joke. Mike's had the same reaction,
right.
I thought it was fake news, and I looked, but it wasn't. So here's his tweet. Happy Memorial Day, ! Those who died for our country would be very happy and proud at how well our country is doing today. Best economy in decades, lowest unemployment numbers for black and Hispanics ever, and women under 18 years. Rebuilding our military and so much more. Nice! And so he writes, so Paul, now Mike, how do you know Paul?
We served together. We were in the same, we did SOI together, and then I think you used to get this when the regiment was in Afghanistan. I have to ask them, because it's been a while, but we were in SOI together.
Okay, so Mike knows.
I was the gunner there, who was the instructor.
Mike knows Paul Soldiers, who writes this thing, and he's, as he said, he's awesome at satire.
Oh no, Soldier didn't write it. It was an army guy that on his staff.
Okay, that writes it. Okay, it says by Lieutenant Dan,
but it's Soldier's. Soldier still runs the Duffelblog. It's his creation.
At the Revolution, and so the article is filled with this kind of stuff. At the Revolutionary War Cemetery in Salem, New York, an intern veteran, Robert L. Jones, who died in the Battle of Saratoga, was quick to agree with the president. Quote, "I was called in a minute, the Minutemen, to defeat a British force marching from Lake Ontario and to lower the unemployment rate among 21st century black Americans," Jones says. "I appreciate what Trump has done, and I would like how the nation looks today if I had eyes to see, but I'm dead. So please get that microphone out of what's left of my face and refill my grave. But cheers to our trumpet-blowing President Trump, who has made America great again after my blood made it great for the first time in 1777. So he goes on to do these satire pieces on the president. Oh my God, it's awesome. So
it was, yeah, it's funnier. I'll get out, man.
It is. And you know what? And you can't make it up. You can't make it up. But again, I blame Kelly. This is Kelly. Trump is Kelly's responsibility. Okay. So Kelly needs to get his shit together.
So we were talking about Nella remember when Neller had to come out, during this whole, when this, the Marines United thing hit the thing, and it was like his first speech as the commandant. And, you know, he had this whole, I don't understand this stuff and this whole social network. I don't even have a Facebook account. And I felt bad for him. And Zolder and me were laughing. And he's like, cause Neller's he's a warfighter, man. He's not a technological savvy dude. He brings people in for that job.
Right.
You know, he's a warfighter. He's a knuckle dragon, bar brawling fighter.
Leader.
I like
He's a and he's a leader.
He's a great leader.
And he's a great,
yeah, he's
you're
a
right.
Inspirational guy.
He's a great guy.
And so I told Zoldra the story about, remember I told you about the whole force escalation stuff in Iraq where he wanted to institute Tim 203 grenades or smoke grenade or white boxers grenades. White star parachutes into the steps, and so I did this video, and he got off the stock. Well, it reminded me, okay, so when we were sending Marine companies to Yemen, when I was still at the division, and, you know, the first thing, do you remember when we were sending Marine companies to Yemen?
Yeah, yeah. So,
okay,
to Sana'a, right?
And reinforce,
yeah,
it was, yeah, reinforce yeah. The embassy and the hotel. And they were... And they weren't connected. They were across the street, down the road from each other. Right?
It was a recipe for something really bad to happen.
Well, okay. So, when this whole came down, this mission came down, and we got tasked with it. I remember sitting in the staff room. We were sitting there, and here's cynical gunner, smart ass gunner, sarcasm gunner, and I look at everybody, and they're all like, "All right, let's go forward." And I said, "Are you guys kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me?" And they look at me like, "What?" I said, "You're seriously just going to jump into this, you know, without testing the water first?" And like, what? And I said, "Dude, Samuel L. Jackson made a movie called Rules of Engagement where he was a Marine in Yemen, and it was a shit sandwich. And if you look at the way they're asking us to do this, it's the same, it's the script to Rules of Engagement. This is going to be bad."
Okay, just so everybody knows, Mike and I have never discussed this, okay? We were at different places.
Yeah.
I was working for the MEF as the OPSO of some of the support guys that were going to support this, and Mike is working a division for the company that's going to support this, you know, and it's
so
funny
because
we have the same exact reaction. It was a recipe that you looked at and thought, "This has all the elements of a fucking disaster if we don't have enough ass there to take care of these guys."
Well, and I said, "Guys, they made a movie about this before 9/11. This movie came out like maybe in 2000 or 1999, you know, and it was about Marines in Yemen doing security, and they had a shit sandwich where they fired on all these people, and they went to jail for the rest of their lives, you know, and we caused more damage." And because it was just a bad area. And so Neller was in charge of it. And I remember we were talking about escalation of force, rules of engagement, and ECP stuff. And he wanted to employ, he wanted to shoot SMAWs at vehicles in the compound. And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? You know, so in my mind, the great thing about being a gunner is I can visualize the weapons employment in my mind. I can see, like, the good and the bad. The problem with the small in an urban environment in Yemen, because you're right on top of each other, if that round does not hit, and at the time, we were pretty good at maybe 35% of every rocket we shot at a known target, it wasn't moving, we hit it 35% of the time. Our rocket gunnery sucked because we just didn't shoot them enough. We didn't have enough ammo. I mean, it was a long litany of
How many rockets a year would the average assaultman shoot with a small?
Actually, he'd shoot maybe two.
Okay, Mike, what would you fire twice in a year and call yourself an expert?
Exactly. Right. So that's my whole point. Well, tell me what you do twice in a year and call yourself an expert at it. So I'm glad you're learning, Max. See,
I'm taking notes. I'm like Megan. I can see it coming.
Right.
I know which lecture I'm going to get. So I'm learning.
So, you know, and I told him, you know, I was like, God, I mean, I'm just visually seeing what if this small doesn't, you know, strike its target and it goes into the building across the street that is owned by, you know, pick a name, and detonates inside there. Then what?
Yeah, then what?
You know?
Or it skips, right? It skips. It does all this crazy stuff that they do.
I mean, just all this stuff should go wrong. Yeah, it's just, and it was just such a bad, bad situation. So it was another opportunity for me to throw MSG under the bus because it was like, hey, wait a second. You know, this is State Department wants this, right? So this is a State Department. They want this. And I think this was after Benghazi. And that's why.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's why it's such a high profile because, again, knee-jerk reaction, the Obama administration, they were famous for that. So they wanted to put more forces in there so they don't prevent another Benghazi. Instead of, hey, I got an idea. Here's a great idea. Close the goddamn embassy.
We're
not doing any good.
We can't. It's our symbol in Yemen.
Yeah, and where's that symbol now? Oh, yeah, it's gone. It's closed. You know, we got smart and pulled and left. Because we realized, you know, you're in a stew of shit. It's a shit stew. Who's going to take a bite of shit stew? I'm not going to take a bite of shit stew.
I
know what shit stew looks like. I know what shit stew smells like.
Do you know what it
I know the ingredients.
Do you know what it tastes like?
And, well, that's my point, is I don't need to. I can imagine. What shit stew tastes. I know the ingredients of shit stew. I know what it looks like. And Yemen was a shit stew.
I'm looking at the embassy right now on a map. And this is what, so Mike's sitting, Mike and I are sitting in different meetings, and they throw the slide up there and they say, okay, here's the embassy. Okay. And then the other place that the company's got to protect is the hotel. It's the Sheraton Hotel. And well, how far away? Well, it's between a quarter and a half mile, probably two long city blocks. And you're thinking, and so if the embassy gets attacked, are we QR? Well, yeah, there's going to be a QRF that moves where the majority of Marines are going to be at the hotel because you got to have people up on top of the hotel in case it gets attacked and the hotel grounds are pretty low. And you're like, and you're just looking at it going, whose stupid idea? How about we move the embassy onto the grounds of the hotel? No, we can't.
What?
Yeah, no, we can't do that. So you think that these guys who've learned from what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, first of all, there's no way in hell that two blocks, that QRF is ever going to get to the embassy. It ain't happening.
Right.
If you attack the embassy, you are waiting for the QRF. You know what doors it's coming out of, and you're going to hammer the shit out of it.
Right.
Well, how can you be so sure?
You're going to do a test run first. You get the embassy, see how the QRF responds, what route it takes.
How can you be so sure? How can you be so sure, Mike?
Because they made movies about it. I mean, again, I think the movie that we're talking about the Yemen Marines, and before this even happened, that's what they did. The terrorists watch movies. If anything else, they watch movies. And in every stupid movie, the QRF gets wiped out because it's a plant.
Right.
And we fall for it every time, even in real life, guys.
Yeah, I mean,
don't go that way.
Yeah, we go. Yeah, we.
But that way, every single time, if you go the same route every single time, they know what route you're coming. So what do? They go that route, and then they get their ass handed to them, and then they come back, and you're like, "I don't like to be the guy I told you so."
But I told you, I told you so, and that's no shit from real life experiences in both Iraq and more in Iraq than Afghanistan, because Iraq, those guys were smart.
Yeah.
Those guys were smart. I mean, they could think it. They couldn't shoot. If they would have had a gunner program to teach guys how to shoot, fuck, man, that would not have been a good deal, because yeah, that would have been a bad deal. I want to ask you. Do you think that they invented the gunner rank specifically for you? Because the gunner, right, he's a weapons person, but he's a special advisor to whatever battalion, regiment, division that he's associated to. Okay? So he doesn't, per se, have a lane. Okay? Now, there's some people that know how to exploit that, and some people who don't.
I didn't.
And then there's some people, that not only exploit it, okay, they take it to levels that it wasn't even imagined to be. Do you think that rank was specifically designed with you in mind?
It's kind of unique that, yeah, it falls right in line with my personality.
Yeah, it does.
That's the way I operated. I don't think it was designed with me in mind, but I think I was built for that, you know, that job.
No, because Mike has the personality, you know, he's got a sense of humor and he's smart. But when somebody pushes back, I mean, and I've heard him say it in meetings, hey, I don't work for you. I work for Dave Furness. So if you don't like it, that's too bad. Okay? But that's what I saw. That's what I know. That's what I believe. And it ain't changing just because you don't like it. And you're like, whoa,
The thing that I credit myself on a lot was the fact that I didn't care about making friends. The friends I had were good friends that I didn't need anymore. And all you need in life is, you know, a few good friends that will, you know, be honest with you all the time. Other than that, you're good to go. You don't need 3 dozen good friends because there's no such thing. You know, so I didn't need to make friends. And I realized in the end, as long as I stayed true to the core and the Marines and what you become their voice and what was good for them, not what you think was good for them, but listen to them, see their deficiencies, and then fight for them, then you couldn't lose either.
Tell you how many times I've walked up or been a part of a conversation, and Mike says, well, okay, this needs to happen and this needs to happen. And then somebody replies, oh, we can't do that. And the next question is, who said? And then they say, oh, well, Master Gunnery Sergeant so-and-so or Captain so-and-so or Lieutenant Colonel so-and-so. All right, let's go, boys. We've got a little fucking work to do. And off they go to write some shit and get shit straight. And then you see Mike a few hours later and you say, what happened? He's like, everything's good now. Everybody happy. The right thing's going to happen. Just have to do a little bit of work. And no, but honestly, your personality perfectly suited for that job.
But it's making people understand, to finally, yes. Imagine a world where we all said yes. People came up to you. They needed help. Yes, of course. What do you need? Or, you know, no one got turned down for anything. Your problem now became our problem. Let's solve it together. You know? And, you know, in a lot of the times where I would not tell the guys right off the bat was, I had lieutenants walk in my office, you know, newly guys in the fleet, and they'd be like, hey, Gunner, I got an idea. I want to do this, this, and this, and this. And here's how I want to do it. You listen to them. And then it's kind of like, it's not like shooting skeet, pull, and then shoot. it's more of the soft letting down. Okay, hey, let's think about this. Are you at this level yet? Well, no, not. Okay, so let's get to this level, and then to get to this level, and then explain to them that, you know, you don't have to get to be the ninja in the night that sneaks up and takes out sentries, you know, that good. If you get everybody across the board just good, I mean, everybody in your whole platoon knows how to navigate, knows how to operate at night, knows how to shoot, knows how to communicate, all that stuff, you got a great company, a great platoon. So let's get to that level before we start trying to get all the, out here and do all sexy, cool, fast-roping ninja stuff on the top of a building in the middle of the night and do a hostage rescue. You know, I get it. It sounds great. But in reality, those don't go good. And, you know, you don't want to be part of that mission because it's just a shit show. And, again, only in movies and TV shows do things work out, because in real life, Murphy gets a vote, you know. And so you guide them through. You give them the books. You have them. You do it. Don't do it for them. Force them to do it for themselves, because then they learn. And then they know the steps. And then they go through the whole process of understanding, looking for their deficiencies, designing a program to work out and to get their deficiency taken care of, and to sustain their training. And you start building that in leaders, and then, like I said, work yourself out of a job. I used to tell that to gunners. You know, the gunners were invented because staff NCOs in the infantry stopped being staff NCOs.
Explain.
The core nucleus of infantry guys.
Right.
So they brought the gunner program back because we were losing that core nucleus of the subject matter expert in the infantry. Staff NCOs, which up until that point, that was their job, they started to realize that there was a career progression, and they had to get the career stuff in order to retire. So that became more important, is let's hit the career progression blocks. Don't worry so much about this, you know, and they started pushing away from that stuff. Well, the officers got that. Let the officer write the orders. Let the officer,
yeah,
you know, sir, we'll take care of them in garrison, and then we'll just sit back, and you got them in the field.
I was just going to say that. That's what you heard.
It's like,
tactics isn't my business. We'll be if I get shot.
Yeah, that's the officer's job.
We'll be if I get shot, it'll be your business. But no, you know, I remember, and then, you know, but it's such a cool job. As an infantryman, I remember going to Major Allen, and the guy who's going to become the commander of 1MEF, Jody Osterman, Lieutenant General, I took over. We did this night attack at IOC, and I thought it was artificial. The Marine Corps used to do this this night attack, and it was just the stupidest shit you ever saw, where you had...
Oh, the TBS?
Yeah, comm lights and well, you had chem lights and comm wire, and you followed this shit, and it was just like... And so I remember doing it, going back there as an instructor, and thinking, like, if they're this jacked up that you can deploy like this in their forward battle space, in their security zone of their unit, let's just walk up and shoot their ass, okay? We don't need to do all this bullshit. But who are you going to do this to that's that on your ass? So when I got to it, and then I took over the night attack, and we didn't do it. IOC's was a better version of that, but it was still very controlled and choreographed. And I said, and I said that with Major Allen at the time, and I said, hey, sir, I'd like to change this thing to make it something that we'd actually do. And he said, Mac, what do you mean? Because it's a difficult problem. Night shooting, we don't particularly care for it, and now you want to make it more difficult. And I said, well, we'll train to it, but how would we do it? If you told me to attack do a company attack on something at night, how would I do it? I would have to start outside their security area. And then once I started closing with it at night, I'm not going to hesitate. I'm going. And we're going to use a combination of speed and firepower, and then when we close in, we're going to have to do fire movement, you know, to kill them, right? And I said, so we'd start. So, and I said, the way I'd do it is I'd have my platoon online. I'd have the squads in column, and they'd be spaced, and we'd close. And then as soon as they know they see us and they start shooting, we deploy online, we do fire movement, and we hammer the shit out of them, right? And he looked at me and said, well, that sounds reasonable. I said, well, I mean, let's just assume he's patrolling as OPs. We got to be outside that, and we're going to blow through all that, right? And so he said, okay. He said, well, how do you, he said, Mac, that's pretty sophisticated for a rifle platoon, let alone, you know, lieutenants that are just learning. I said, well, you know, we're going to do this 10-day war. How about there's a couple days over the weekend when we're going to have some downtime. They've got to physically recuperate. We're going to resupply them, all that kind of stuff. Why don't we put them back in an assembly area, and we'll take them to Range 5 in Quantico, and we'll do live fire and movement at night, and we'll do iteration after iteration after iteration. And then the culminating point and the most dangerous part of this event, and this is the kind of shit Mike did, was when we go from moving as squads in column and closing, and I mean running. You're running with night vision goggles on, you're running, and then we deploy, we make contact, we deploy online, right? That place where the two squads come together, that's where you're going to have trouble. Somebody doesn't see somebody, somebody's out in front of somebody else. And so we've got to train for those guys to look for each other, to keep space in between each other. And I said, and so we'll do that. And I said, and you can go downrange and you can certify it. And so we did it. And it was awesome because we started, I don't know how many hundred meters away. And, you know, you're closing and you're running. And all of a sudden from an OP, you hear a simulated machine gun, bump, 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 and then, you know, it starts. And then they deployed online, and, you know, the guys out on those flank fire teams of those squads were looking for each other. You know, they knew their first job was to kind of tie in and locate each other. And then they started fire movement and only, you know, only shoot at known targets. And the critiques were really interesting. The most interesting comments ever would be from staff NCOs who were going through IOC and would say shit like, I've never done one of these in the fleet, and I've been in the Marine Corps for like 12 years. Okay? To be honest with you, I was scared shitless when I saw this. And what we just did was awesome. Was awesome.
What we always have done is complicate things in the Marine Corps. We make things harder than they need to be. And I don't know why. I really don't know why. Because I used to tell people, you know, that one of my strengths was is I didn't like to work. I really didn't. So I would try and get all my stuff done right away and then be done with work, and it'd be 9 a.m. and then screw up. And then that gave me the opportunity to go drive around and do whatever I wanted and go walk in people's offices and have fun and be loud and boisterous and, you know, just be larger in life type of person.
Right. See all his colonel friends and call him by their first name. Oh, you mean Rick?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean Colonel Sullivan?
Working smarter, not harder, you know. And there's a story, you know, I don't know if you remember Project Metropolis. You remember that?
No.
So we did this Project Metropolis up in back Victorville. At the there's an old Air Force base up there, and it's got base housing and shit, and it's all deserted. And we used to go up there and do all these experiments. And I'll never forget, I think maybe a sergeant, and maybe a staff sergeant. And we were doing these experiments, and the warfighting lab guys were up there, the X-File guys. And they were bringing out robots for the very first time, these autonomous robots. And remote control, and they'd drive them in. And so we were playing the enemy, and they were going to bring these robots in, showing everybody how sophisticated these robots were and the information that they're going to gather and how they're going to just make the battlefield better. As the robots came into our area, we ran out there and tipped them over and then ran back. So now there's robots laying on the side going, oh, yeah, I can't get up. So we tipped them all over before they even got into our area.
I think you just started to recite a clap-on commercial, didn't you?
What?
I've fallen down and I can't get up. I think that's what I
got. Yeah, that was the robot. They just couldn't speak, though. So then they reset the whole thing, and then the engineers came out and said, okay, the enemy, you guys can't go over there and tip these robots over. And I'm like, why? Well, because, they can't get back up. Well, aren't we showing you a problem then? I mean, isn't that why we're here? Yeah, but we need to experiment forward. Okay, all right. So don't tip them over. All right. So then the robots came at us again. And they're trying to come in. We ran over there and turned them off. Because the on-off switch was the universal, just a black switch with a zero and a one on it, or a line. And that's kind of a universal switch, so you turn it to the zero. Robot goes dead. They're not tipped over. They're all off. But it was just, okay, reset. You guys can't turn these things off or tip them over. You guys can't just touch them. You can't touch them. You know, just leave them alone. You guys. But I remember those lessons. Those were the lessons when I was young, a young Marine going, okay, when I get in a position, I'm never going to do this. Because if there'll be other Marines like me looking at me one day going, God, that guy's stupid. And I don't want to be in that position. You know? So there were 100 of those things. Like, I'll never forget when I was the first, young Marine, and I think I told you this. The very first time I was in the fleet, I was with 1-1. We were doing this attack across open ground. And it was a simulated attack, blanks and stuff. And it was the frontal assault. We had the frontal assault, we had the envelopment, and we had the double envelopment.
Right.
Which really was a bad idea unless you really had some good communication. So the frontal assault was no different than Napoleon Bonaparte's frontal assault.
Right.
Except for we could fire a little more. We could fire faster. But so could they. And I was a radio operator, and I looked over at my lieutenant, and he had his H harness on, because that's all we had, soft covers and H harness.
Right.
We didn't patrol with our, we didn't bring our body armor or anything, or helmets. And I look over at him, and he's got his H harness on, his cartridge belt, he's got his leather 45, US with the leg strap on it, the little snap thing. He's got the 45 ammo pouch on his left hip, and he's got the first aid kit flanked by two canteens on his back. And then he's got, a couple of, like, his compass case was up on his, A-tarnish up on the top where his shoulder was.
Right.
And he had his map in his hand, and he had his 45 in his right hand with the lanyard. And he had the hammer back, and he looked at everybody and goes, "All right, let's go! Follow me!" And you're running the hill. And he's pulling the hammer back, because he didn't have blanks for 45. And he's pulling the hammer back on his 45, and he's, like, running and aiming, pretending to aim. Pull the trigger. Click, 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 click. And everybody else is shooting, up, 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 the blanks. And they're jamming back then. And I remember how stupid we looked. Like, this is not, if I'm going to die in combat, please, Lord, don't let it be like this. I don't want to go down looking dumb. I want to go down, like the hail of bullets, getting shot up and still firing. Ah, two guns in my arms, surrounded by enemy, but not running into the face like an old Western. That this is not going to end well, boys, but let's do it anyway, because, let's just get it over with. Because that's what it seemed like to me.
Truth be told, that's what it was. I mean, it was people who didn't think a whole lot, and again, I look at things that went on in Vietnam. We were not, I would tell you, we were not a very mature, thoughtful organization. We had a legacy coming out of World War II, and we did that kind of shit. And people got told to do stupid shit, and when they were out there and they pushed back, they got told, hey, do it. Shut up and color.
Go back and get that film.
Yeah, and instead of saying, hey, fuck you can relieve me when I come back, but I'm not putting my Marines. And you know who tended to blow that shit off? Enlisted guys who were platoon sergeants and platoon commanders are like, I'm not doing that shit. And I'll tell you who did it. Jim Bathurst, who was a sergeant in Vietnam and took over as a platoon commander, I want to say a couple months in, and was a platoon commander for the rest of his time there. He said, I just wouldn't do it. They tell me to do shit. I'd be like, Roger, got it. I wouldn't do it. And because they didn't know what was going on. But we had so many stupid things happen. It just, I got my ass chewed. I was down on the football field at Margarita when Mike and I were at, with 5th Marines. It was at Margarita at Pendleton. I went out to 29 Palms, and I couldn't control my platoon in an attack. And there was nobody shooting back. It was the 400 series ranges. There's these series of just the terrain kind of rises and goes down. It's almost like it was shelled at one point. But it's that kind [S2] Right. [S1] Of terrain. And you're trying to yell at people. You're trying to, you know, direct people with hand and arm signals the way you've been taught. And it doesn't work.
It's a joke.
And so you can't do, you fail in the attack, and nobody's shooting back. And then you go and you're like, oh, you didn't do this, you didn't do this. Like, nobody, like, so I thought, this is Second Lieutenant McNamara. The next time I do that, I'm only going to use the base unit. I can only control one guy, which is the base squad leader, and he can control one guy, which is the base fire team leader, and everybody else has to do their job based on that. And so we went down to the football field and at Margarita, and we would do this shit, no handed arm signals, no voice commands. And then my company commander was walking from the armory back to where our barracks were, and he saw me down there. And he says to me, what are you doing? And I said, well, we're doing this. And he says, don't do that anymore. And I said, why not?
That's stupid, Mac.
He said, Mac, that's stupid. That's not the way we do it. And I said, okay, sir. But I kept doing it. And the next time we went out to 29 Palms, my platoon crushed it. And so the coyote guy in the debrief for my platoon, and I don't mean crushed it. I mean fucking crushed it, right? Fast in the attack, you know, because they weren't waiting for things. They were looking for movement in order to move, right? And we didn't stop.
Coyote guy crushed you.
No, he didn't. He said it was awesome. He said, hey, that kind of violence in the attack, and that's exactly the way we teach it. And I was still a second lieutenant. I said, I didn't say anything during the critique. And afterwards, I went up to him and I said, hey, sir, can I have a minute? And he says, yeah, Mac, sure. He was all happy, right? Because it went great and he was a coyote because he thought he had something to do with it. And I said, that's not how you teach it. I've worked with my guys to specifically not do it the way the Marine Corps teaches it, which is handed arm signals and voice commands. If you notice, I only control the base unit, and I just push them relentlessly along with the base squad leader, and the other two squad leaders have to keep up, have to do the right thing, have to know when to release because of proximity to the enemy and the amount of fire. They've got to know when to go into team rushes and then buddy rushes. But we've trained to that. This is not the way the Marine Corps teaches it. And the only reason I'm telling you this is not to be a snarky second lieutenant, but I'm telling you that more people need to do it like this because this is what works. I don't see how the other shit works because it didn't work the last time I was here. And then he just looked at me, and then he says, okay, I've got to go do this other debrief. I want you to come back, and I want you to explain to me more about what you did and how you did it. And he took the notes after, and it's frustrating because you just see stupid shit, and it was three bags full. Do stupid shit, and that's how you know. I was never good at that. I never did stupid good. It used to piss me off.
Right.
Hey, listen to this. Listen to this stupid one, Mike. I go to sea duty, and my Marines there's this two man rule. So whenever you're moving a nuclear weapon, you have to have two Marines on it.
Exclusion rule.
Right, and so you have two men, and so you move them from like you secure the whole elevators of the ships, and you move the nuclear weapons get moved to the flight deck, and then you're moving this weapon across the flight deck. Well, the Marines were looking at each other, and I'm like, what? And they were watching each other the whole time. I'm like, well, why are you watching him? He's on our team.
He might run over there and steal the nuke.
He might. I was like, no, we're worried about everybody else. He's in the PRP program. He's a Marine. You're guarding it together. I need you to glance at him to make sure that he's safe, but I don't want you to watch him the whole time. Oh, so that's not the way we do it. If he shoots, if he shoots the weapon, I'm like, okay, let me bring the ship, one of the ship's gunner on that deals with nuclear weapons, and he's going to tell everybody what happens if the other Marine shoots the weapon. And he walks in and he says,
nothing.
Nothing. It can't penetrate the casing.
Right.
And they still wouldn't give it up. It was stupid on top of stupid. It's like the threat is someplace else. Your job is to look outboard. What?
Yeah. Same thing when I remember it was when it was defined to me as a two-man exclusion rule. The two-man rule was that they would look at it and I'm like, well, why? I mean, he's a Marine and he's in the program. If there's anybody I trust, it's that guy. I mean, if I'm going to shoot anybody, it's going to be these Navy guys.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I don't get it. And they were like, Sergeant, don't read into this. This is the way it is.
Mike, I
expect. But then when I became a guard, I told my guys, I said, we're no longer going to look at each other. Look outward. Look
really?
Out.
That's awesome. I went into the ComNav air pack instruction. This is the way how you had the, you know, this is the stupid kind of shit that kids, young Marines got taught to do, and they were like, no, no, and I was the new XO. So I was like, you don't understand it, sir. So I go into the ComNav air pack instruction and pull out something that somebody who must have lived my life had written, and it said, nothing in this instruction will preclude the application of common sense in the execution of these orders. And I took that, and I made a copy for everybody. I said, look, think about what you're doing. Use your brain and explain to me, after you read this, why we're doing stupid shit. And then the smart guys were like, you're right, sir. But Sergeant so and so, he's crazy about it. Like, and so I fire. So I sent him someplace else. Yeah, you go someplace else. We don't need you anymore. I don't need stupid guys here. But no, your personality is absolutely was perfect for that job. Honestly.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, like I said, a good time. And you know, so Zoldra and I were talking, and we something came on the subject. We were talking about gunners. And he goes, you know, when I was in the battalion, I maybe met my gunner once, and he was this old crusty guy. He just didn't want to talk to him. He was not a very approachable guy. And I said, he goes, the first gunner that I liked was you when I first got there. You came out to the range, and you're like, hey, I got all this ammo. Let's go do this, boys. And we were shooting saws in the, you know, the standing position, just emptying ammo over and over and shooting them in this and having, but you'd always show up with this kind of like kid mentality of, hey, you want to have fun? Let's go do this. But, you know, like I said, it was the whole, teaching them stuff, letting them be Marines, you know, and just having a good time.
And the other thing is listening to them, right? If they say, hey, Gunner, why are we, and why are we doing this?
Oh, that's okay. Because I would tell guys, they'd say, hey, sir, why? And I could read what they're going to talk about and say, okay, hey, listen, everybody could gather around. Everybody gather around. I'm going to say this one time, all right? One time. We are doing this because it is stupid, okay? And if you read into it, then you're stupid. Let's just go out there, do the stupid thing, and get back safely, all right? If you're going to ask me why we're doing it, remember when we talked about this is stupid? Stupid has no explanation. We just... It's just done. Now, when you start questioning stupid, then you're stupid. So this is, we understand it's stupid. It has to be done.
Right.
Because we can argue all day long. In the end, we're going to argue against stupid. And that goes against the whole idiots, you know, you're the bigger idiot.
Right.
And if you, in the end, it's still going to get done. And when you argue it, that person who can't see stupid, because they're blind, stupid blind, is going to walk away thinking that you're stupid. Right? So let's just do it and have the understanding that we all agree that guy is stupid instead of him thinking that we're stupid. Right? So you see this and they're like, shit, sir, that makes sense. All right. Let's go do stupid.
And you know what? And
we have fun.
And the Marine Corps is really
fun.
Yeah, the Marine Corps is really fun. And another thing, Mike and I agree on, is like, there's nothing that says the Marine Corps shouldn't be fun. Training shouldn't be fun. It should be. And it should be this. It should, you should make it fun. And because you know what happens when you make it fun is they open up to the learning, to you and your leadership, and that's how you affect them as a leader. By
you create a memory, a lasting memory.
Right. And there's not enough people that do that. I have one more. Somebody sent me an email the other day and said, I was listening to the Gunner talk about vehicle collections and shooting shooting in the vehicles. He said, I was at the Cloverleaf in Fallujah. We had a vehicle collection point. He said, and we had a racetrack around that thing that was awesome. He said, we would.
The Cloverleaf inclusion. Okay.
He said, we had a whole series of vehicles that we would yoke up. And when we'd have downtime, we'd get in them and we'd drive this racetrack we had set up. It was awesome. He said, I loved our time down at the ECP. It was some fun days. Not that it didn't get crazy at times, but that racetrack, one of the most fun things I've ever done in my life, which made me laugh.
Blast.
Which made me laugh.
So, hey, Tuesday we're going to have Zoldron. So
at nine,
what we want to talk about.
Wait, at 9 o'clock, what time?
Your time. So 11 o'clock, my time.
Okay, all right. So 9 o'clock.
Can't be late, man, because he's a businessman. So you got to find us.
All right. No, we'll be on time. All right. We'll figure out what we're going to talk to him about. But we got to we'll do what normally do, introduce him, and then introduce him and
his background,
and then he tells the story a little bit, and then we'll talk.
One of the questions that probably you want to know is like, how did he start the Knuffle Block? How did that come about? Has he always been a sarcastic, satire guy his whole life?
Right.
Or is it just natural?
Right. And then what? And then
I will tell you.
I'd be curious to know. I mean, that started probably very naturally. And then what opened up? How has his life changed? And all the rest of it. Because I know the Commandant, I heard that the Commandant consulted with him because Soldiers is kind of this tapped into the enlisted, satire, smart guys. And so I think the Commandant went to him for like, well, what do they think about this? So when he's looking for truth serum, Soldiers is one of the guys the Commandant goes to. Kind of so interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. No, it'll be fun. I'll give you a call over the weekend. Hey, were you fired up last night when Houston beat the shit out of the Red Sox or what?
You're an ass, man. Why would you bring that up? I've already put that behind me, Mac. I'm moving forward. I'm not a person that lives
in the past?
History, Mac.
You live in the past.
I live forward. I'm a forward-thinking guy.
You're a windshield guy, not a rearview mirror guy?
Yeah, apparently I take my wind. I don't even have a rearview mirror in my truck or side mirrors. Because I don't care what's behind me.
Or next to me. I just go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish you would have watched the NBA playoffs because with 4 seconds left, a guy on Cleveland forgets the score and it's tied. Free throw miss. He grabs the ball and takes off running like he's going to run the clock out. But the game's tied and they lose in overtime. But we can't talk about that because basketball is an activity. It's not really a sport. And you don't participate.
Right.
So, anyway.
All right. And my favorite part of the year is?
What?
When basketball season's over.
You know, you got about like another 10 days and then it's done. Stanley Cup.
Remember when they used to play 3 games in the championship? 3 games. And then they decided that they needed to make more money and they went to 7 games.
No, they've been playing 7 games forever. What are you talking about?
Look it up, Mac.
Hold on. Lieutenant Colonel, do you know Lieutenant Colonel Bill Brown?
No.
Hmm. All right. Anything else? What's going on this weekend? You doing anything? How was lunch?
Hopefully not. Hopefully it's going to be a calm weekend. I hope so.
All right. So but nothing.
We'll see.
Nothing crazy. All right. How was lunch yesterday?
Oh, it was good. It was really good.
All right. I'm done with you. Soldiers on Tuesday.
Tuesday at 9.
Tuesday at 0900 Pacific time. Soldiers. Paul. All right, you got to shoot me a phone number so I can get him hooked in.
So it was 2003. The first round was changed to be the best of seven in the NBA.
No, it wasn't.
Look it up.
What are you looking at?
When did the first round of the NBA playoffs change to seven games?
Oh, the first 2003. The first round or the final round?
First round.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the final round. Sorry about that.
No.
We're talking about the NBA Finals, man.
I know, but they used to do, in the first round in the NBA, they used to do three games. That's the three.
See, that's what they do in baseball.
Yeah, but the NBA realized, you know what, there's a lot of money being
lost. A lot of money left on the table, boys and girls.
Let's do the best of 21 games.
But the NBA used to be fun to watch, man. Larry Bird. You know, Magic, Michael Jordan, that used to be, and I've never been that great of an NBA fan, but I mean, I used to like to watch the finals when those guys would normally be some combination of that when I was younger.
It's showboating.
Yeah.
Now it's all about showboating.
I agree. But.
When's the last time you've seen someone called for traveling?
Yeah, you don't see that much. They run all over the place. Like, don't you have to dribble? No, not anymore.
Five steps. Boom, 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 boom. We'll give them five steps now. We want to see that slam. That's what they paid money for, these loop-de-loop slams over the thing. You know, that's what gets that crowd energized. And you can't do that with the old traveling rules, so you don't call those anymore.
Hold, let me read you an email. Hey, have you two ass clowns seen the stories of two different NFL players in the last couple days? One paid for the luggage of a traveler who was coming back from overseas, and her bag was too big or too heavy, I can't remember which, and it was going to cost her $50. She didn't have the money, and he stepped in and paid. And then there was another guy who plays for Green Bay who was pushing a wheelchair with a woman in it out to the luggage check, because the person that was supposed to pick her up didn't show up. Interesting. These are the kind of great stories the NFL could tell if they would just make the national anthem nonsense go away. Notice the NBA doesn't have this issue. They focus just on their product. The NFL is a bunch of idiots. Their players do good things, but that story can't get told because this other story gets in the way all the time. Yeah, I
disagree with that.
You disagree with what?
That whole thing.
Go ahead. Why?
If we're putting these guys up on a pedestal when they do something good, they should be doing this stuff all the time without making the headlines. Who cares if they're a celebrity? Oh, look at that celebrity! They just pushed a kid on a lady on a wheelchair.
I agree. I don't disagree with that.
Below it?
I don't know. I don't disagree with that.
Should we reward them when they do something like that?
No, I don't disagree with it. And those guys didn't ask to be rewarded. You know, they were just doing, you know, stuff. I think the point is that those in fact are good stories. But they can't be told because of the national anthem thing, and the NFL can't seem to get it right. So.
If the football players had a set between their legs, then they would come out collective as a collective group, not as a union, but as a collective, and say, you know what, we are this, we don't stand for this. These are, and point the fingers. This is, you know, the commission, the NFL commissioner, you know, commissioner and his cronies. This ain't us. We are the players. We back this. But no, they're always subdued by, you can't say anything because the union doesn't approve of this, and you know, you're gonna screw that. This is another reason why unions need to go away.
Oh, man. Jimmy Fallon's head just snapped.
Unions serve no purpose in modern world as of today, other than to put money in someone else's pocket. To create a middle management that has no purpose will ruin your bargaining group. Well, I can do that myself. Oh, we're better at it. Well, why? Well, we have your best interests. We have your best interests at heart. Well, don't you think me personally has the best interests of me? I'm better at it. Well, you see, no. But yeah, unions are a fear mongering. They put fear in people's heads of if we go away, then you're on your own. They're gonna sacrifice you. Then you know what? Then the mediocre people will get fired. You have to perform then. You're all gonna have to perform. That's what it's gonna be. Your pay is gonna be based on your proficiency. What? God forbid we get paid on how good we are.
You know,
like the rest of America.
I have a, unions used to do good things, and I agree with you. But
yeah, in the 1910,
sports unions. You look at the stand that most unions that represent athletes have not taken against performance enhancing drugs. Those drugs don't help you in your life. They screw your body up. And so unions are supposed to, be there for the to protect you. So if they're there to protect you, what should they have advocated for? Hey, we want you to come and play baseball and make great money and set yourself up for the rest of your life. But we don't want drugs as part of the work environment because that's not good. That's not good for us as athletes. They never said shit about that. They knew it was going on. And so it makes them look like shit. It makes them look like shit. And so I have a hard time with the same thing with, look, if you're part of the NBA, NFL Players Association, and you're watching the ratings go down, and you're watching how the story of the NFL is the single biggest story about the NFL is the national anthem controversy. Hey, look, as a business, we need to deal with this, and we need to be a part of it. So let's sit down with the owners and say, how can we – they've already given us $90 million to create this social advocacy fund. So I guess we want more than that. So let's figure out how we can do this, give our players a forum to vent their political statements, but not on Sunday when the entertainment piece is going on. Is that unreasonable? I don't think so. But – have they done that? No. It's their right. And now what you're hearing is statements from players on certain teams saying, I'm glad the owner of the New York Jets stood up for us, so now we can do whatever we want, and the team will get fined, but we won't, so we can still keep doing it. Like, are you kidding me?
Well, athletes are entertainers. And this is, athletes are no different than singers or actors. I don't give a shit what your political stance is. You're an entertainer. Entertain me. That's what you're getting paid for.
But Mike, here's, and that's a great example because, you have entertainers that have done this kind of shit, right? Right? Chief among them, the Dixie Chicks. And it's appropriate. If you take that kind of action, the Dixie Chicks got put out of business because of it. Their careers were destroyed. So if you want to go there and you want to take the consequences of it, then I don't have any problem with that. The problem with this is they want to do it in your business. They don't want any of the consequences that go with it. And then when the consequences do come home, they yell, oh, there's collusion. I'm getting screwed over. No. This is just business. We don't want you. And so that's what bothers me. And the union doesn't play any role in solving the problem. And so I'm not a fan of most unions.
Like I said, I've been on a big movement of athletes, actors, singers, any kind of celebrity. They're not celebrities.
Right.
I don't know why they get that classification. They are a lesser person. to me.
Ooh, man.
You know, they got talent. They have a talent. But in acting as a talent? For Christ's sakes, really?
You're right.
If you think acting is a talent, you're a freaking moron.
Hey, let me just tell you, right. There's a Geico commercial. Is it a Geico commercial where the guy looks at the camera and says, "Trust me, I'm an actor"? One of the funniest lines ever in a commercial. "Trust me, I'm an actor." And at that point, you just start laughing because it's a piece of comedy. And you're like, what is that, a Geico commercial? You know? And
if you think an actor is talented, here, I'm telling you right now, your IQ is the sum of your two shoes.
Well, hey, all you have to do is look at Roseanne Barr, okay? Right?
Well, look at all of them.
Look at
Baldwin, you know.
But again,
Susan Sarandon.
They're no different. You know, they're no different from the general population, because in and amongst them are people like J.J. Watt, who doesn't seek any fanfare, who raised $40 million for the city of Houston, and you never saw him hop in front of cameras and talk about himself, right? Gary Sinise. And you don't see those guys out there thumping their own chest. And so
Gary Sinise is not that guy. He's not out there pumping his chest.
Right.
He's not out there asking for, you know, he's out there doing it because it's right to him. It's the right thing to do.
Right. Right.
But that's why I said, athletes, I don't give a shit whatever. I really don't care. Kim Kardashian. Oh, this is my favorite. Stop drink. Great. Choke on it. I don't care. No, and there's a lot of people out there, man, that watch these celebrities, watch actors, watch athletes, and, you know, buy this. And what's the first thing they're out there doing? They're buying it. Why? Because this actor or this celebrity said it's good. So you're telling me, you're saying that person's life his self-worth is more important than yours, that he is that important that he can change your thought process, whatever it is, because you're going to follow that guy. But the guy that raised you, or the mother that raised you, your parents, you know, we don't give a shit about them, or your siblings that, you know, go out and do great things with their lives, who cares about them? Because they're not important. They don't do anything that's kind of, you know, over the top. You know, these actors, ooh, that's what I want to be. You know, the royal family, the same thing, this whole royal thing, you know, who cares who Prince Harry's married? He can marry, you know, I don't care if she's a former stripper. Who cares? I don't care. Who cares? Why do we care so much what other people are doing? Stop worrying about others and worry about yourself. Your life.
Listen to that, a little bit of philosophy.
But, I mean, you know, again, this would be a much better world, much better place to live in if everybody started caring about those around them, not those that they can't have any of. They're never even going to meet. And if they met them in a coffee shop, they wouldn't even give them the time of day.
No.
So your favorite actor, I'm going to hate to tell you, your favorite actor, your favorite singer, your favorite athlete, 9 times out of 10, unless it's like a J.J. Watts or somebody, you walk. Can I get a photo of that? The answer you're going to get from the security is fuck off.
No. You're going to get the Katy Perry answer, and you're going to be sitting there with this stupid look on your face like you just got blindsided. Like, what just happened?
Right. And then you're going to get angry and say, right, how can they treat me like that? Because you're one fan. If they lose, big deal. They just got two more yesterday.
Right. No,
it drives me crazy.
It's the fan. Yeah, you're right. No, it's the whole fan worship thing, and the irrational piece of that.
Yeah, and the first time they do it on mass media with a cot and their video, where they can lose a lot of fans. What's the first thing they do? Damage control, man. Charity concert. They're out there doing something. You know, they're picking up babies and kissing them. They're down at hurricane relief. Why? Because damage control. They don't want the image of them to be, you know, spoiled in the light and lose. Because they lose. Here's the thing: it's crazy. People don't understand that. Katy Perry loses fans. Guess what? She loses
money.
She has no talent. I mean, if you ever hear her sing, that's because she she sings because they have like a device called Auto-Tune. Your voice goes in and it comes out pitch perfect. So if you ever hear her in real life, she's horrible. And most of the songs that they sing about, they're just bebop, kind of trendy, you know, to the same tune, anything. Just change the drum beat a little bit, and we got another hit. Again, it's you're a sucker, man. The consumer suckers that fall for this stuff.
But it's a huge part of the culture, right? Every day you turn on the TV, and what do you get? You get them.
Some celebrity, some dancer, some singer, you know, some actor, some athlete, you know, said something about somebody, and it's on the news. Who cares, man? That's how TMZ and all those other companies are multi-million, if not billion-dollar companies now. TMZ, founded on gossip.
Yeah. Yeah, now they have multiple
journalists.
They have multiple shows now, or they have a sports show which is just devoted to gossip on athletes.
And people and they're making hundreds of million dollars. Why? Because people lost what's important.
Okay, hey, text message.
They lost the way.
Text message. Mac, then what do you and the Gunner watch on TV? Mike, what do you watch on TV?
I don't watch TV. I live life. My TV is the world around me. It's my social, you know. It's like, God forbid. I mean, I don't watch TV. I watch a little bit of TV. I watch some news. I listen to that until my stomach gets kind of queasy, and then I turn it off. And then normally I watch some documentaries. If there's some really good documentaries on, I'll watch them, as you know.
Right.
You haven't given us
a good one in a while, though.
There hasn't been one. Well, The Terror. I'm still watching The Terror. I think it's over with. Actually, yeah, the final was on. So Terror's over with, so I'm done with that. I'm just waiting for another good documentary to come out.
All right. I have the news on, like, in the morning, just in case, like, something, happens in the world, and I'm sitting here doing the show. I'm not talking about green eggs and ham when the Eiffel Tower just got tipped over or some shit like that. And then, but like Mike, and I was talking about this earlier, you can only watch so much before it just sickens you. So I'll watch the Yankees play, and the Yankees got rained out last night. So I watched my Astros just hammer the shit out of the Red Sox, and that made me happy. And then I made some salmon, and the lieutenant got home, talked to the lieutenant, and. After the baseball game was over, flipped over and watched the end of the NBA game, and then that was it. But I don't watch like
the chicken recipe after this.
What?
The chicken recipe. I'll send it to you right after.
Yeah. This. Why is that taking so long, man? What was like Roseanne's show? I've never seen anything Roseanne Barr has ever done on television.
I
don't watch like episodic TV. I don't watch series.
I don't watch reality TV.
Yeah, I don't. So I like Mike. I watch documentaries that interest me, but I shut off DirecTV. I have YouTube TV, and I essentially watch sports. I know, pretty shallow life, Mac. Pretty shallow life, but. That's the way I do it. If you don't like it, I don't give a shit. So
I'm not here to make your life better.
There you go. But yeah, celebrities. Another text message. Hey, just watched Secretary Kelly escort the North Korean dude into the White House. I think he's about a foot and a half taller than that little guy. Do you think he like stared at him and snarled at him and says, "Don't even make a move, or I'll plant you in a planter"? He's not secretary.
He's chief
of staff.
Kelly's foot and a half taller than everybody.
Kelly, Kelly would think that. He wouldn't say it unless you pushed him. Unless you pushed him. Then he, might, then he might say it. He's funny, though.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You know, now he's a little bit more, he's got that stern look about him now.
Yeah, more often. But I'm sure if you got him alone, he would say.
He knew he could trust you.
Yeah.
If you wanted to.
Then he'd say, hey, you know who's the biggest asshole in the world?
Yeah.
You know, someday, if he cares to, I'm sure he could write a pretty interesting book.
Right.
And he is funny, too. He is funny. I tell the story that I had this baseball that I found in Ramadi. And I was working for General Mattis, so I'm working maybe 3 feet from Colonel Joe Dunfer. I have this baseball on my desk. Kelly comes out and he looks at me and he grabs the baseball off my desk and he's flipping up in the air. And then and Mike used to hang out right next door to us in the G3 sometimes. And so Kelly grabs this ball, and he takes it, and he throws it high in the air, and then he jumps up, and he catches it, and he crashes into, like, the stone wall of the Division CP, right? And as the ball's in the air, you hear him say, bottom of the seventh inning, Kelly playing left field in front of the monster, Red Sox up 4-3, oh, it's hit, right, runner at second, balls get hit to left field. Kelly's running. He leaps. And then he catches the ball, right? Kelly saves the World Series for the fucking Sox. The Sox win. All right. And the Marines are standing there like, what in the hell is he doing? And then, and then he goes for like this victory lap with his hands in the air. Kelly saves the World Series for the Sox. Kelly, Kelly, Kelly. And then he stops and he throws the ball to me and he looks around and he goes, what are you jackasses looking at? Why aren't you working? Right, and they all look at him. And then he goes, Dunford, get your shit together. And then he turns around and walks back in his office, right? So, I mean, it's just hilarious shit that keeps life normal in a really abnormal time. And Kelly's funny. He's a good dude. So, anyway. But Mike's right. He looks, when I see him on TV, he looks more serious. And I can only imagine. Like, you know what? When we say this, like, that's what you know. Can you imagine what you don't know? He knows what none of us know. Shit, he must be
jaded. Yeah.
He must be jaded as all hell.
Yeah.
Jaded as all hell. All right, send me the recipe.
All right, man. I'll send it to you right now.
That is the one and only Michael Musselman from Granbury, Texas. There you have it. Used to be from Minnesota. He's not there anymore. The email, Mac, I've met a few gunners. And I don't think that rank was designed for anyone other than Michael Musselman. Other ones have done well in the billet. I do believe his personality, his sense of humor, his smarts, and his lack of respect for rank made him uniquely qualified for that rank. I agree. No, if you ever saw him in action, he was... Yeah, no, it was. It was a perfect, if you want to talk about the Marine Corps got the most out of one guy, that rank for him put him in a position to contribute in a lot of different ways. And he didn't know his lane. Yeah. Like you'd say some colonel's name and he goes, oh, Larry? Wait a minute. You're like you're a Pinopalian. Okay? That's sir to you. That's colonel so and so. Yeah, whatever. Walk away. But anyway. Alright, that'll do it. This program repeats itself momentarily. Have a great weekend. First weekend in June, the completion of our second year. Third year starts on Monday. Fired up about that. And Monday, Alex Hollings from SoftRep going to join us. He's written some cool stuff, so we'll talk to him on Tuesday. Paul Soldier's going to join Mike and I. So he from Duffelblog, so that'll be interesting as well. Have a great weekend. On a Friday, All Marine Radio. out.